You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. Wednesday morning, hump day. Hope you're doing well today. Thank God the president clarified what he really meant, right? Yeah, see this lump on my head? I didn't get this lump because I fell off the truck this morning, okay? It's a tumor, you dope. Oh, what I meant to say was, I mean, that is downright Clinton-esque, right? Yeah, whoever thought that up after at the end of it when they decided to roll with it. Yeah, that's, man, that guy's getting promoted, decorated and promoted. That guy, that woman, whoever. That human being is now just, yeah. Hey, see Larry over there? No, see Larissa over there? Yeah. She's the one that came up with that little bit of magic that said, if you just switch this word and say you got confused and misspoke with the double negative, it all makes sense. What? Hold on. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. What's your name? Larissa. How long have you been working here? Since the inauguration? Oh, well, nice to meet you. Give her a desk someplace. Yeah, so thank God. Yeah, it's Clinton-esque. It's Clinton-esque. Oh, my God. So yeah, but I think everybody breathed a sigh of relief so that now we know the rest of the story. Now we know the truth. So we can all continue our lives. So anyway, what a shit show, huh? Yeah, pathetic. But again, we have a sick system, right? And you see sick all over the place. You see sick in the Justice Department, right? The one thing that the hearings and the investigations have done, they've revealed what people, I think, have said for years, but people like me certainly didn't want to believe it because the people that said it were themselves people that aren't devoted to the truth. Guys like Sean Hannity, guys like Rush Limbaugh that talked about this deep state. Well, there is a deep state, evidently. There are career people that put their politics as people that are supposed to serve the democracy. They want to have their political say too. So we've seen the disease has spread to the Justice Department. And by the way, Jeff Sessions needs to resign. He needs to go away. We need a real like Attorney General. Okay. So anyway, the disease, we've seen it. You know, I wouldn't even pick on the president. We see it most notably in our choice for president, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. Are you kidding me? That's the best this country has to offer in terms of leadership? We all know that's not true. They're not the best this country has to offer for leadership. But that's what the system gives us. And then we've seen it relative to our elected, our legislative branch, an organization that can't do shit. Yeah. That's a technical explanation for, yeah, they don't do anything. They can't do shit. The most basic of governance things they can't do. So anyway. So, good morning. On that note, good morning. And then you have like the cherry on top was the explanation yesterday. So. It's that's your world. That's your world. Welcome to it. So there you have it. I didn't sleep well last night. I'm not sure why. But I was thrashing about most of the night. But I don't sleep well. I don't sleep well most nights. So anywho, good morning to you. And let me tell you what we're going to do with the program today. Grant Newsham's going to join us. He wrote a little piece about China and the East China Sea. So the events that we've seen in the South China Sea are that skullduggery is going to manifest itself at some point in the East China Sea. So, anywho, we'll talk to Grant about that. So Grant, always an interesting guest to have. So we'll talk to him, right? As the nation has been focused on other things, pointed more east than west, we'll go back to the Pacific and take that subject up a little bit. Get Grant's thoughts on it. We'll also get his thoughts on NATO. Do a little liberal arts radio before we talk about China. And then I watched a documentary called House 2 yesterday. It's called Murder in House 2. And it's about Haditha. So I don't know, about a month or so ago, we had a writer by the name of Adam Linehan on. And so... So tomorrow we're going to have on a guy named Neil Puckett. Neil Puckett was one of the attorneys involved in the Haditha trial, court martial. Neil Puckett was Frank Woodrich's staff sergeant Woodrich, I think he was reduced to private, but Staff Sergeant Woodrich is, well, maybe not. I have to double check on the final adjudication of that. But he's going to join us tomorrow. And tomorrow we're going to do kind of a liberal arts thing on military justice because Neil, former Marine officer, right, comes in as, I believe, an intel officer, if I'm not mistaken, and in the late 70s. Then goes the funded law route, so the Marine Corps pays for him to go back to go to law school, comes back into the Marine Corps, and I don't know exactly when he got off active duty, then he goes and he goes into private practice. I believe he's doing some stuff now for the Department of Defense. And so, anyway, we'll talk to him about military justice. I asked him, I said, do you mind if we do it in two segments? Do you mind if we talk about military justice? Because I follow it, and I don't think it works. And maybe you can explain it to me, because in Neil's long career, he's been a military judge. So he's done a number of things, and he's been involved in it for a long time. So we're gonna talk about him. We're going to talk about it. And then we're going to talk about, in general ways, you know, how do these court martials, how do they work? You know, who's doing what to whom? Because I don't get it. I honestly don't get it. I go ahead and I pay attention to court martials, and I look at the outcome, especially where officers are involved, and I don't understand. If when we do military justice, a component of it is a deterrent, right? So the UCMJ is not there. It has a dual purpose. One is, right, it deals with high crimes and misdemeanors. Two, so it's involved in military justice. Two, it's there to maintain good order and discipline. So it's unlike, there's a component there that's unlike civilian justice. Okay? So I don't get, there seems to be very little message sending involved in military justice. So we'll talk about that. We'll try to see if he can help us understand in some of these things that we see, we just don't, and the people in charge, nobody pays, right? Nobody pays. You know, at Parris Island, a gunny gets 10 years because he hazed a recruit. He hazes a recruit. That hazing contributes to the recruit's suicide. Gets 10 years in prison. Got a wife and four daughters. The lieutenant colonel, the commanding officer, who knew that he wasn't supposed to be in that job, is going to be allowed to retire as lieutenant colonel after paying a fine of, what, $6,000, forfeiture of $2,000 for 3 months, and retire as a lieutenant colonel. Wow, did anybody sit up and take notice of that? No. No, so the gunny gets smoked, and I mean the gunny, the recommended sentence was 7 years. The court gave him 10. Boom. Wait, here's not only the book, here's the footnotes to the book that go with us. Piawi, right in the head. You, colonel, lieutenant colonel, yeah, you can pay a fine and you can go. Because after all, you know, it's the system's fault. It's the system's fault, and that's a cop-out you hear over and over and over and over again, you know. And again, I go back to the Navy. The officer's deck of the Fitzgerald, her negligence, killed 7 sailors. If she was uncomfortable, the standing orders of the ship say that wake up the CO. Didn't do that. In fact, if a ship got within 10,000 yards of the Fitzgerald, she was supposed to wake up the CO. Didn't do that, and that happened, I don't know, before the collision, I want to say it happened between 0 and 12 times, something like that. So you see these things, and then worst of all, when you're going to collide with another ship, you don't see it 15 seconds before it happens. Okay? Not on a clear night. You see it minutes. And no collision alarm, no general quarters alarm is sounded, and that collision kills seven sailors. They need maybe 60 seconds, maybe less, less than that, to sit up in your rack, right? Jump down, grab your shit, and run. Okay? Jump down, put my pants on, put my boots up, zip my pants up, and then grab my shirt and run. Because I don't know what's going on, but we're going to general quarters. It's normally not a let's screw around event. Okay? So you don't do that, and you're not culpable. And then you hear, you know, you hear her story. You hear her story about, you know, she'll never forget it. You know, I love my shipmates. I have the Latin longitude tattooed on my, you know, cry me a river. and you know, and then you have family members say, well, it's not her fault. Well, whose fault is it? Well, the Navy knew the ship needed repair. Hey, look, we go to sea like that. We go to war like that. You have leaders that are supposed to be able to do that. If I notice you're tired, I send you to go sleep and I get somebody else that's competent that can do it. We understand the ship's not going to be 100% all the time. Okay, so what do we do? What do we do in its place? So it just seems like military justice for officers. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get it. So anyway, so we'll talk to Neil Puckett about that. And then next week, we'll bring him back and we'll talk about Haditha. In watching the documentary, essentially, it starts with what's the guy who writes the Time magazine piece? Give me one second. It's called One Morning in Haditha. By Tim McGurk. So anyway, it starts with McGurk being interviewed, and he's telling a story of watching President Bush give a speech at in Philadelphia. And his speech in Philadelphia, somebody says, a woman, he gives a speech, and he says, well, my speech ran a little short. I've got a few minutes. Does anybody have any questions? And a woman says, can you tell me how many civilian casualties have occurred since we began offensive operations in Iraq, words to that effect. And he uses the number 30,000 civilians have been killed. Okay? So McGurk says he's listening to that, and he says there's a story there. How have 30,000 people been killed, 30,000 civilians been killed? You know, the quote-unquote march up was relatively brief. So where is this number? Are they? That's a big number. It's not a small number. So he says he's looking around to go do a story on civilian casualties. Now, the only way to get outside of Baghdad as an American journalist is to be embedded with the United States military, but he doesn't want to do that. So he starts shopping around for a NGO, non-government organization, that's doing work in Iraq, and he finds this organization, I want to say, that puts on circuses. Yeah. It puts on circuses so it's going around. And so he meets the guy who's running the circus, and he hooks up with them. And then at some point, the guy says, hey, I have some video I want you to see. And McGurk says, what is it up? He said, well, it's pretty disturbing. And it is video of Haditha, some of which you would undoubtedly recognize. And so McGurk's, like, not biting on it because he knows that a lot of this stuff was stuff that insurgents did, and then they videotaped it, and then they tried to feed it as, you know, Americans have done that. So, you know, he takes it with a grain of salt. He takes the video, and the guy says, no, American Marines did this. So he sends it to 2MAF, 2nd Marine Division, I can't remember what, and he gets back, and they show the emails. You're falling for this? Can't believe you, and this is from a second lieutenant, can't believe you're falling for this kind of stuff. Everybody was 15 civilians, I think was the initial count. So anyway, that's his initial response. So the documentary then walks you through, McGurk's initial interaction with the Marine Corps. Then two Marines of Kilo Company, 3rd Battalion, 1st Marines, who were at Haditha, them being charged. I think the videotape that's most prominent is, I believe, that Neil Puckett, whenever he, or often when he met with Staff Sergeant Woodrich, he videotaped it. So that videotape becomes much of the documentary, as well as videotape of the lawyers as they sit around talking about the case, things they don't understand, blah 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 blah. So and then it migrates to the actual case itself. And one of the issues for Cesar Woodrich is he doesn't recall a lot of the specific events in the room. And as lawyers, they didn't know if he didn't recall it or if he wouldn't say, because if he says, he's going to implicate Marines in a squad. So you kind of see that. And then ultimately, they go back before... I think before the trial in 2000, the last trial, I'm not sure if it was, last trial happens in 2012. I know because my ops chief was part of the jury. Yeah, I was the opso at MEF headquarters group. My ops chief was selected, you know, at Master Sergeant Ernest Martinez. He'd been on the program before. And he gets selected, you know, I don't know how many combat deployments, enlisted guy, went through as a platoon sergeant, platoon gunny, you know, legit, Ernie Martinez, now doing drone stuff. Yeah, now he's an aviator, teaching drone stuff to Marines down at Camp Pendleton. Anyway, so Master Sergeant Martinez is on the jury. And, but before, I think it's before then, they go back to Haditha. And they go back to House 2, and the documentary shows Woodrich in House 2, and they're now asking very specific. The other thing that's laced into the documentary is the NCIS guys who went over there, who lay out the forensics that they developed from the site. And the essence of the documentary as it concludes, because the way it concludes, so everybody else is immunized. Woodrich is the guy, okay? He's the guy that the Marine Corps decides that they're going to go after. So you have this whole theme it developing in the documentary that the forensics don't point to Woodrich. Yet the immunizations are all geared to convict Woodrich. So ultimately in the final trial, you know, and Woodrich, you know, he doesn't want to go to prison. And so on a personal note, all of a sudden one day, you know, my mass sergeant, he'd come in, right, check his email, and then, like, hey, sir, I'm out of here. I'm like, all right, later. Come on, tell me what's going on. I can't. And he'd leave. He sometimes he came back, sometimes he didn't. But he was assigned, you know, he was TAD to the court-martial, so he didn't have to come back. So all of a sudden one day he comes back, like at, I don't know, 10 in the morning. What are you doing here? Trial's over. What? What happened? Plea deal. And so the picture they paint is of an inept prosecution who immunizes the wrong people and then lays out the case, beginning to lay out the case, and they put witnesses on to attempt to convict Staff Sergeant Woodrich, and the witnesses themselves admit that they lied in their initial statements. And so it's horrible. Now, they don't, the forensics don't add up, right? So now when the defense is about to put their case on, and the NCIS guys are going to be testifying, and it's going to be leveraged by Woodrich's defense, and that's when the plea deal is offered. And it's really unbelievable in terms of the plea agreement. All right. After several postponements, all right, Woodrich is going to face 9 counts of manslaughter. Okay. The trial starts in January 2012. Right? We had come back, RCT1 had come back from Afghanistan in, I want to say, early September. I went over to be the OPSO at MEF headquarters group, which is the command element of the MEF. Right? And underneath MEF headquarters group is Intel Battalion, Radio Battalion, 9th Comm, Law Enforcement Battalion, Anglico, and then the command element of the MEF. Nightmare. Yeah, your basic nightmare. First of all, I didn't know anything about those. I knew very little about those organizations. I knew what they did. Their op tempo, everything the MEF does, there is a slice of Radio Battalion, Intel Battalion, COM, not always Anglico, not always Law Enforcement Battalion. And there's some command element support to it as well. Those guys go all the time. And the op tempo, and the Marine Corps never says no. Never says no. So it's just, they go all the time. An incredible education for me. So my mass sergeant's on the jury. On January 23rd, all jurors at the court martial were dismissed. After Woodrich pleads guilty to 1 count of negligent dereliction of duty. Okay? 1 count of negligent dereliction of duty he pled guilty to. He had been facing 9 counts of manslaughter. General Thomas Waldhauser, Lieutenant General Thomas Waldhauser, was the CG of Marine Corps MARFOR Central Command as well as the CG of 1MEF. Okay, he's dual-hatted there. As part of the agreement, the charges of assault and manslaughter were dropped. Woodrich avoided jail time, was reduced to the rank of private, and received a general discharge from the Marine Corps on February 17, 2012. They actually, like, showed them talking about the plea deal, and they're stunned. They're offering us what? The only thing they didn't do was say, we'll drop the charges, right? Because at the end, he gets nothing. And then the documentary goes on to who had the authority to immunize all these Marines. And you see the signature of General Mattis on everything. So what they attempt to do in the documentary And they don't do it very well because they don't. They leave it as an open-ended question, and they just point the finger at him. He did this. Well, to me, the interesting part in all of this is who led the investigation in terms of the prosecution. So I sat there for an hour and 47 minutes, riveted on it. Watching it, listening to different statements, and ultimately what happened. So the thing I'd like to do is what should have happened? What should have happened from the time that those events happened? What should have happened? There's also a couple of very, very interesting things that I'd love to run down and get explanations for it because they don't explain it in the documentary. There's one survivor. She's a little girl at the time. Now she's a young woman. And she made a statement. That was never given to the NCIS. That statement was never given to the NCIS investigators. As they put their case together, it was requested. They had heard it existed, but it was never given to them, so they assumed that it didn't exist. It was just something that they had heard about, but it existed. They never saw it. Two, they were told not to conduct a test. As they do the forensics and they're going through images, because they obviously the investigation starts months after the event, so obviously they can't go to the crime scene and spend days there, right? And then ultimately when they do go back, I think they're there for an hour looking and taking pictures and things like that. So what they're left with are the pictures that were taken that day by a Lance Corporal who was told to photograph what was there. And they put numbers on bodies and they photographed it. The Lance Corporal's interviewed and he says, but there was never an investigation. And I held on to these pictures. And then I came home and nobody ever asked for them. He said, and it was... I couldn't believe it. And then one day I got a phone call and they said, we hear you have photographs. And he said, yeah, they said, we want them. He said, please take them. And he talked about, what it was like to go through and do that. Anyway, in these pictures, they notice that on the ear of one of the children, they use a specific word and has to do, I want to say the word speckled, but it's not. They use a specific ballistic term for what it looks like when there's a gunpowder burn on somebody's body. And so then they talk about how close you would have to be, in a room in order to do that, which didn't line up with anybody's story. And so they're getting ready to do the test with various military weapons to see how close you would have to be in order to place the shooter in the room as they're drawing diagrams, right? This person shot at this angle fell at this angle, so the shooter would have had to have been here. This person fell here, there would have had to have been a second shooter that would have been in the room here. So just the stuff they do with forensics. They're getting ready to do the test, and they're told not to do the test. What do you mean don't do the test? It's part of the investigation. Don't do the test. Look, trust me, you do not want to fight this. Do not do the test. So as part of the investigation, they didn't do the test. So there's a few interesting pieces in it, and so the question becomes, If the test gets you closer to the truth, why don't you want to do the test? No matter, the truth, The truth takes us where it takes us. So some interesting stuff. Nowhere, I couldn't tell you sitting here this morning who the prosecutors were in the case, because they don't talk about that. So I think that, to me, as you look at military justice, whoever painted the picture, and again, I served for General Mattis, and I've seen him, and he's not afraid of the truth. So, but if you have somebody who's doing the investigation, writing up the investigations, you know, and telling you that this is where this is leading us, right? Garbage in, garbage out. Here's what we believe we need to do. Because it's not the commanding general that's sitting there, you know, deciding these things. You've got this whole legal team led by the MEF SJA that comes up with these kind of things. So it's very, it's called Murder in House 2. And it's pretty amazing to watch. So anyway, Neil Puckett will join us tomorrow. So, but today, as part of show prep for tomorrow, we're going to listen to the interview I did with Adam Linehan, who wrote an article about the documentary after it was screened, I want to say at the Tribeca, Film Festival. So we're going to talk about, that. So I've got to find the Adam, I got to find that interview. And then once I find it, we'll go ahead and listen to it. But, so I'm kind of curious now that I've seen it. I'm kind of curious about the interview now that I've watched the documentary. And so we'll listen to that again, and that's a very long-winded way of saying that's what's on the show today. So, with all that said, I don't know if it's out yet, if you can release it. I was given the link with a password. Hey, Mac, post it. I don't think I'm supposed to do that. This is from Ohio Man, entitled Helsinki. So he meant to say wouldn't? Can you believe this shit? I guess he didn't dig a big enough hole yesterday. Break out the fucking shovels, dig some more. Does this kind of idiocy work in Queens? I've never been there. Yes, if you haven't paid attention to Bill Clinton, Pete Rose, right, Hillary Clinton, do you ever admit a mistake? No, only fools do that. Continue the charade, right, and play it forward. On to the next event. We're done with it. It's over. It's the way it happens. It's the way it happens. So, next, another email. General Kelly, do you think he'll write a book? My impression is no, but I don't know him. Okay, this is just my opinion. Do I think he'll write a book? The answer is yes. I think he'll write a book about his career, and I think this would be a piece of it. Do I think it'll be a kiss and tell? No. I think it will be his observations of a life of service. And, but can you imagine the money he would get for that book? Why wouldn't he write a book like that? Question is, what would the publisher, you'd have to knock off the, you'd have to knock down the money a little bit, because I'm not going to go there, right? I'm not going to kiss and tell. But I will talk about these events and what it was like. Okay, I'm not going to be hysterical about it, but it'll be part of, you know, the narrative as I write it throughout my military career, which is going to include a lot. So I would hope that he would write a book. It's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be a kiss and tell. But I mean, he wouldn't have to work anymore. He's a scholar too. So anyway, I hope he writes one. He's seen a fair amount of history, and the last few chapters would be pretty interesting. Another email. Very motivating to see Medal of Honor recipients honored. You know what? I didn't see the start of the All-Star game because I was watching the Haditha documentary. Yeah. And so I'm watching the Haditha documentary, and and so the All-Star game starts. I don't watch. I think I picked it up in the second inning or something like that. But at the end, they were showing this montage, and I'm standing there watching it, and I see the All-Stars standing out there after they're being introduced, and then I see Barney Barnum behind them. Right? I see these guys standing there, but the shot, the way it's taken, you can't see the Medal of Honors hanging there, okay? Because the athletes are taller than the guys standing behind them. But I see Barnum's head, and I'm like, hey, there's Barney Barnum. And then I thought, and then I see them standing there, and then I see the blue ribbons, and I'm like, wow, how cool. So I agree. Well done by Major League Baseball. Well done. And certainly appropriate in the nation's capital. So pretty cool stuff. All right, so my boy Aaron Judge went deep. Love that. Anyway, good morning to you. As I said, thank God the president clarified that. The I don't know if I'll have a whole lot more to say. You know, it is what it is. It's a sick system. Okay? It's a sick system. I will say this, though. Relative to policies, he himself is a shit show. The policies of his administration, don't bother me. I like them. You know, Grant came on 2 weeks ago and said, yeah, it's the United States is actually standing up on its hind legs in the face of China. Who would have thought? I like that. I like what we've done with North Korea. I don't know what will happen. I keep my fingers crossed. But I like, you know, I like what we've done there. Relative to NATO, I think NATO's going to a better place because he's called them out. But, you know, he's terrible. And again, the stuff, why, again, I think for you, you know, a lot of people, you know, when people say, oh, Putin's got something on him, blah, 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 blah. When you watch that Helsinki press conference and you heard the things he said, you know, when he started to extol that he's even offered to have, you know, using this treaty, for us to turn over the evidence we have, you know, which we go straight to his counterintel guys. How do they track this? What do the Americans have that we don't have? How did we not defend this? How did we not mask it? This is how they found it. Okay, that would be. And then ultimately, like, we find your evidence lacks, is not valid. So we reject. We will not be extraditing or our officers from the GRU to the United States. So when he extols that, you're sitting there thinking, dumber than a bag of hammers. Why would you say that this is ingrained? This is a great, great, I hate when this happens. Why are these system announcements, I'm going to snap, why are these system announcements playing on my computer? Because, Mac, they want you to lose your mind. anyway. So, but, all right. So with all that said, every time there's a system update, they'll reset certain audio settings on your computer. And it drives me insane. So anyway, is there a way to prevent that? I don't know. If there is, I don't know. But very long-winded opening this morning. Interested to have Neil Puckett on because I don't understand how justice works, especially relative to officers in the United States military. And I'd be curious, and ultimately where we'll go with Neil Puckett is put yourself on the other side. How do you go about collecting this evidence, and how does a guy who's as smart as General Mattis, how do you get it so wrong? Because ultimately, the conclusion of the documentary is the Marines that did the shooting were three Lance Corporal. I think they were all Lance Corporal. I think two of them admitted to it in statement. All given immunity. What? So anyway. So, good morning to you. United States Marine Corps Band makes it official. Dedicated to the ideals set forth in the Declaration of Independence in our Constitution in the hope that someday the people that get elected can actually be faithful to it, right? We're having some rough days where, again, I think if you brought Madison and Adams and Jefferson back and said, okay, watch this. Is this anything like you envisioned it would be? I think they would go for the nitroglycerin tablets and say, you know, Evelyn, I'm coming, which is a Sanford and Son event. So this is dedicated to that hope.
We have fought. You're betraying your whole life if you don't say what you think, and you don't say it honestly and bluntly.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
For this campus had prepared him well. I'm very confident to thank you very much. If this was vodka, it'd be a lot better speech. But I'm not supposed to glamorize alcohol anymore, so the young folks here ignore what I just said.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
I had a Vietnam vet tell me one time, Jeremiah, he goes, PTSD, it's like having a cage in your brain, it's like having a cage full of monkeys. The goal is to keep the monkeys in the cage, because once them bastards make the jailbreak, all hell breaks loose, so you want to keep them in the cage.
Can you imagine, were you a Vietnam veteran, and you came home, and they told you to take your uniform off and don't talk about it and just forget about it?
I can't even imagine. I have so much respect for those guys.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds, and win. You got to win.
Speaking of winners, joining us is the Prince.
Hey, man.
Is the Prince, Michael Musselman? Why are you calling me?
I had to call you right away to tell you one of the coolest days I've ever had just happened today.
Why?
Okay. So have you heard of a guy named Dick Stoltz?
Dick Stoltz. Why would I know the name?
Because you've seen it before. So have I. So anyway, Dick Stoltz is a combat fighter pilot from Vietnam who amassed 5,000 hours in the F-106 cockpit and downed, I think, two MiGs, three MiGs. Just an incredible military history. Fighter pilot, back in the good days when the Air Force really were a good fighter pilot, you know.
Easy now, easy.
Yeah, I know. But Dick Stoltz is also known for, he was a cartoonist that drew out some of really famous cartoons depicting the fun of the Air Force. And a lot of them still hang in, like, Aviano, Italy, and the Air Force Base, and other places all over the place. And his collections are sought after, you know, they're his cartooning. If you look up Dick Stoltz, you look at some of them, and if you're like that era, you're like, oh, I've seen these things before. I just don't remember where they're from. So you're going to be saying, like, well, why is that important?
Yeah.
Gunner?
I'm already thinking it. Why are you filling up my airtime with this?
So I was giving a speech today at Pecan Plantation, which is a big area out here, at the country club for breakfast. Every Wednesday have a breakfast club, and they invite guest speakers in to talk about subjects. So I'm talking about situational awareness, you know, how it came to be. Talked about how the Combat Hunter program came out in the Marine Corps, and, you know, how we changed and we started focusing on situational awareness and what it really meant, that Combat Hunter program. As General Mattis said, be the hunter, not the hunted. So we were talking about that. Well, lo and behold, who resides in Pecan Plantation? Dick Stoltz. Who is at the breakfast? Dick Stoltz. Who decides to take a plate, a big dinner plate, from the country club, the breakfast plate, and draw out a character, you know, and kind of like this old 1960s fashion to it, of me talking, and does this whole situational awareness theme and the Marine Corps theme, draws Just Blues on me and everything, and then hands it to me as an award afterwards. So I'm like, wow, this is pretty cool. I mean, it didn't dawn on me who Dick Stoltz was at the first time. And so I look at the back and I see he wrote on there, it said, the true original art by Dick Schultz. And he put on their value of $1,000. So I'm like, why would he do that? Well, because artists have to do that, right, when they do, like, things like that. So I'm thinking, after he leaves, I thank him. I'm like, man, thank you very much. This is really neat. I like this. You don't believe me when I say that I like things like this as gifts than bought gifts, you know?
Right.
This. So he leaves, but in my mind, I'm like, God, I've heard that name. So other people are talking to me, and so as I get done, I get on my phone, and I look up Dick Schultz, and I'm like, oh, my God, I've heard of this guy. He lives here. I just spoke to him, and he came up to me and said, that was one of the most informative classes I've had in quite some time. You've really opened my eyes. You know, thank you for being here. And he gave me this as a token of his gratification. So I was like, wow, what a good day, man. What a good day. So look up Dick Schultz.
No.
Look him up. It's S-D. Yeah. Dude, it's cool. I mean, his Air Force background is just the coolest. It's S-T-U-L-T-Z.
Well, did you get his phone number? Now that you're boys with him, tell him you want him to come on.
Well, okay, I will, but I didn't tell him that. I didn't think of you. I was thinking about me.
I'd like to say I'm shocked, but I'm not.
I'm being honest, Mac. I'm trying, all right?
Look, you don't need to be honest. I know the truth even when you're lying. So, like, when you're honest, it doesn't matter to me, okay?
You're right. I know. Wasted effort. I know.
So, are you going to shoot us a picture of the plate?
Yeah, I'll shoot a picture of the plate. It's cool. I like it.
He says,
Pecan Plantation Speakers Award, Metaphysiological Psychoanalyst, Do the OODA Loop, Mike, July 18th. And then on the back it says, Essay is Life. Because he knew John Boyd.
Wow.
You know?
Boyd.
That's cool, dude.
Yeah, I know. Boyd.
They flew together.
If you ever met Boyd, he was a smart guy, and he put some people off because he was smart and he intimidated people. And he knew his shit. And so it was fun to be around him.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have to be in the room and he's still the smartest guy.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. But it was fun to see guys like General Zinni, who were as smart, guys like that, who were as well read, kind of sit and talk to him about life and about military operations and how they saw things and the differences they saw. Well, Colonel, I see you saying this and I don't agree with it. I think it should be this way. And then Boyd would go back at him. Pretty cool stuff. So you've had a good day so far. Well, congratulations. You're happy. Is it a long drive home? Are you going to be in traffic?
No, I'm in Granbury.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to run. I got to do an interview.
Okay. Bye.
All right. There you have it. Michael Musselman's happy today. Doesn't happen often. Most of the time when we talk to him, he's calling in to scream about something else. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, we'll take a break. When we come back, Grant Newsham's going to join us. And then after that, we're going to listen to an interview I did with Adam Linehan. And he wrote an article. Who does Adam write for? Stand by. I'll come up with it here. He writes for Task and Purpose. He wrote an article called Just Kills, How the Marine Corps Blew the Biggest War Crimes Case Since Vietnam. And you know what? So we'll listen to that in preparation for Neil Puckett tomorrow. So don't touch that dial. Interesting show coming up. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.